Welcome to A Quiet Life. I'm your host, Ruth Amos. 1 Thessalonians 4 says, make it your ambition to lead a quiet life. In this podcast, I chat to all sorts of normal Christians, asking them just how they live their quiet lives and how they integrate their faith into their daily life. I hope that by listening, you will be encouraged to go out and live your own quiet life to the glory of God. You can find the episode show notes, the Quiet Life blog, and other resources at ruthamos.com.au. That's ruthamos.com.au. Now let's get on with the show. Hello, welcome. It's good to have you here. I'm Ruth, and I'm really happy to be sharing with you today. Today is episode 12 of Quiet Life, and as I record this, it is Wednesday, the 9th of January, 2019, and I am enjoying the beautiful summer weather we've been having here in Tasmania. It's been gorgeous, but wherever you are, whether it's morning or evening as you listen to this, and whether the weather is beautiful summer weather or horrible winter weather, beautiful winter weather, I hope that you're having a great time and it's great to have you with us. Today's guest is Matt Garvin, and Matt and I have shared a few experiences in common as we've grown up. We've both grown up in community. So Matt has grown up in Fusion, and I have grown up in a variety of different communities, as you'll hear on the podcast. And I really wanted to talk to him about how he had applied to community, or how he felt growing up in community had changed his life, and the applications that he had are really amazing and apply to all of us, I think, all of us who are in the church. So that was really, really good. Another thing that I found really amazing and interesting in this interview is Matt's insight into the place of pain in our lives. He's been through a bit of emotional pain, and he's very happily shared that with us. And I hope that you can gain insight from his insights, and it'll help you with your life as well. So this week in my life, well, we're getting back to normal. So the children came back from camp. Both my children were camp leaders on a camp. So I still send my children to summer camp, even though they're adults and they're leaders now. And they enjoyed it. They had a great time. They were absolutely exhausted and just both came home and went straight to bed and had a nap, which is fun. And then the next day, Jess went back home to Canberra. So our household is now back to normal. And then the day after that, my brother went back to Adelaide. So that was our final family visitor. So we're all back to normal now in terms of family visits, Christmas visits. And that's a bit sad, but it's also, I also like getting back into routine. I'm a bit of a routine junkie. So for me, it's okay. I'll miss them. Of course, I'm not saying I won't miss them. Just, you know, routine's a lovely thing. Although we don't have complete routine because Moz is still on school holidays. He's a teacher, and Caleb's still on holidays from uni. So we're still a bit flexible and spontaneous, and that's really great. What is happening for me work-wise is that the latest novel that I've written is in Moz's hands, and he is reading it, which is what I like to have happen first with anything I write. He gives me very good insight into what I've written. And so we thought, what am I going to do while he is reading this novel? Because I don't want to rush him or be nagging or be a horrible person. So what do I do while he is reading? Well, we decided that it would be fun to do a 30 short stories in 30 days challenge. So my friend Gladys Connery has written a book of short stories, and I gave myself that for Christmas, and I read through her short stories, and I got all inspired. So what happened is Moz went to Reddit, and there's a Reddit, I don't know what they're called because I'm not a Reddit person, but anyway, a whole lot of short story prompts that he's read there that he decided he would pick 30 of and give them to me. And each day I read a story prompt and then write a story about that prompt. So they're very, very short stories. They may even be called flash fiction. And I'm putting them up if you want to read them. They'll be on my website, rjamos.com, my fiction website. So you can read them there or on Facebook at RJ Amos Author. So yeah, I hope that this challenge will be good for me. I've written two so far and I've enjoyed it. It's been fabulous. It's been so much fun. So much less pressure in a short story than there is in a novel. So I've enjoyed writing it, and I'm hoping it gives people nice reading material too for the summer, something fun. So I'm writing short stories. And the other thing that I'm doing in my business is thinking about how to reach my audience in the year ahead. So I really would like for this podcast, for my blog, and for my books to reach those people that it will benefit the most. You know, there are people out there, I'm sure, who will get a lot out of the interviews on this podcast. I mean, I just think each of these interviews are incredible. The stories that you hear from people, and it's just so encouraging. So I'd like to reach out and find those people that I can encourage with that, and with my other work as well. If you want to help me with that, one of the ways that you can help massively is to go to Apple Podcasts and leave a review on Apple Podcasts or a star rating, and that will help other people to find this podcast. So yeah, that's my major focus as I'm planning for the year ahead, is how I'm going to find the audience that I need to find. And the other thing that I really wanted to do before I sign off this week is to thank Joy for her financial support. It's such an encouragement to me when people actually put their money towards me, their hard-earned cash, and I just want to thank you, Joy, for doing that. That's a blessing, a real blessing. So as we move into Matt's interview, I hope that you enjoy it. I hope that you're encouraged by it, that you're blessed by it. And we will see you, I'll chat to you again next week. Welcome everybody. Today's guest is Matt. And Matt Garvin and I first met, I think, through Fusion. When you were in Fusion and I was in YWAM, Youth With A Mission. And if you know Fusion at all, then you know Matt's name for sure. Let's see, I'm a bit of a Facebook addict, so Matt went to Canada and suddenly there's these things popping up on Facebook, sermons, recorded sermons and all kinds of things. And so I would listen to the online sermons, read the blogs, and that was really cool, following all your adventures. And then suddenly, big adventure, God was calling Matt back to tiny little Hobart, where he's now a pastor of Baptist Church. And still posting sermons on Facebook, so you can see.
Still doing that.
So Matt and Leanne have four grown-up children, and yeah, it's really good to chat with you.
Yeah, well, no worries, it's fun.
It's good. So can you start by telling us how you became a Christian?
Well, it's a journey, really. Like, I remember being about three and inviting Jesus into my heart with my mum, and then telling all my friends and... but I think there's also, there really was this journey of it gradually becoming more and more my own journey. So I chose not to get baptized till I left home, and I was out in Broken Hill, and I did this really boring discipleship course that the church ran there. But as I did it, it was enough for me to go, yeah, no, this is real, this is mine. And Jesus, I want to follow you. So from there, I ended up doing the Fusion Bible College. I was in Broken Hill doing radio, working with the 2BH Broken Hill. And some friends of our family had purchased that, and I'd worked there for a couple of years. It was great. But then I did Fusion's Bible College course, which became a certificate for in youth and community work. And for me, it was like, as we engaged with the Bible, it was like all of a sudden, it wasn't a big emotional thing. It's like all of a sudden you just saw more and things made more sense. And really from that point on, I think it was no longer going to be possible for me to just work for money or to, you know, I was then kind of on an adventure.
Absolutely. So... you grew up in a smallish Christian community.
Yeah, well, I was counting up. I actually grew up in a number of them.
Right.
Initially, my first few my first 12 years were in the northern suburbs of Sydney, in a place called Boroughra. Then we moved down to Sale in Victoria, where we Fusion purchased a farm, and we lived there for about 5 years. There's a training course there. There was also an employment program for teaching people how to do metal work. And it was just a fun place to grow up on a farm as a kid. And then after that, we moved back to Sydney for a couple of years. And in Broken Hill, I lived in a convent with the church there and the Cornerstone mob at the convent in Broken Hill. And then came down here to Hobart, and there was a bunch of Fusion people kind of living in an intentional community. Didn't last real long, but it was a few houses kind of
linked
together. And then eventually we purchased Poatina, and I, after living here in Hobart for about 10 years, we married Leanne here, and we moved to Poatina, and then ultimately we moved to Mornington in Victoria, and there we have Fusion has an old officer's mess that is like a double story building, and there is at any one time there's half a dozen homeless kids living with us, as well as staff and everybody else. It's this intentional community caring for the homeless, and then we came back to Poatina and ended up back in. So I had a few experiences of growing up in little communities around the place.
Yeah, so I know my life's fairly similar. We started in a farm that was doing rehab, and then we moved into a children's foster home, which was linked buildings, cottages full of foster children, and then we went to a monastery in Canberra, and then when we moved back here, we moved back to, I actually prayed for a house with 5 bedrooms so that I could have my own bedroom. I forgot to pray that we'd be the only people living in the house. So many of us in this house, I wouldn't believe. Yeah, and then we moved out to the farm again. And so I was a really, I don't know whether I'm strange or normal, but for me, moving on to a normal house in a normal street that had a normal address, that was just one of the desires of my heart.
Yeah.
But how would you say having that, it's hard to tell because you lived it, but having that experience of community growing up, how that affected your life?
It meant I loved and hated community. It meant that, it's interesting coming in, I never planned to be a pastor, that was never part of the plan. But it means I come into being a pastor with a sober understanding that people are messy. And that community requires grace, but it also requires difficult conversations, and just because we all believe in Jesus doesn't mean it's going to be simple. So I think it equipped me to be a pastor in ways I hadn't even been conscious of, but it also gave me a vision. There's a book that really, a few books that have shaped me, but one is by a Canadian guy, Jean Vanier, called Community and Growth.
Mm-hmm.
And he set up the L'Arche communities. And he wrote his book just reflecting the L'Arche communities for caring for disabled that would go on to really influence Henry Nouwen. But it was just this book is this reflection on the messiness and what is needed to build a healthy community. And I think it gave me a vision. The best moments of community are like heaven on earth.
Oh, yeah.
And the worst moments are like hell on earth. and so I understand that like we now own our house in Howrah, and that's a whole series of miracles that, you know, we own the bank. We're paying off the bank, but just having a little house in Howrah and having that is lovely. It just is, I think I have a vision of what the church is meant to be. That picture of intentional community, and it's been so. It's really, you can see there's there are strong emotions associated with it, and some of them are extremely positive, and some of them are extremely negative. And but all of it has shaped me.
Yes, for sure. Well, for sure, as in that's my experience too. So, how did you end up in Canada?
It really was some of the most painful, it was a really painful journey. because I had assumed I'd be working with Fusion for the rest of my life.
Mm.
Then had this messy situation where my dad ended up having to step down from leadership quickly, and a few of us stepped in to try and hold it together. And because my dad was the founder of the organisation, when people lost trust in him, they lost trust and things got really messy. It was really hard to describe. And these people we you know, served alongside, a family. And when Christian community gets messy, it's horrible. But a few of us stepped in to try and hold it together. And I stepped into the international leadership with a few friends for in the end, 2 years in a row with two different groups of people. But it seemed like after 2 years of trying, it became clear that for some people, the experience and the pushing back against my dad meant that being a Garvin, it wasn't going to be possible to be productive. Or so Fusion in Canada got to us and said, look, we feel like God's told us to offer you guys a sabbatical to come and be with us for 12 months over here. I had done some teaching in Canada and connected with the Baptist seminary over there. And so I thought, oh, okay, I'll go and study my master's for a year of master's, study a master's of theology for a year. And it was like the whole journey was miraculous. We got on the plane with Fusion, you don't get a wage. You sort of trust the money will turn up, and it does, and similar to YWAM. And it was interesting getting on the plane, you know, $200 in our pocket. We hadn't had the money to buy passports, but somehow God miraculously provided those. And then arriving in Canada with hardly any money and trusting and really walking through this journey and spending, I think it was like 6 months trying to go, okay, God, what's going on? And as part of the messy kind of phase, I'd actually written a book called Six Radical Decisions about what does it mean to live your faith.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really me trying to find my bearings. And in it, I looked at the best times in Christian community and in mission and the worst times and what is the stuff I was committed to. I was also looking at church history, and I said, well, whenever the church has been its best, there were six things that were true. The first and really the main one is people just love Jesus.
Mm.
Like, that's the drive of everything. And it's their love for Jesus that sets the tone for everything. But from that, they discover a purpose. Jesus calls them into the world to do something.
Mm.
And as they step into that, they discover they need fellowship. And it was really, I actually ended up launching the book over in the UK, and there's something special about going to the pub where C.S. Lewis and J.R. Tolkien would sit down having a cappuccino there. I wanted to have a beer, but my son was with me, and just knowing the fellowship those guys had, it would have been dumb for the local pastor to try and tell C.S. Lewis, you know, how to write the Narnia Chronicles, but the kind of fellowship he could have with the Inklings is what he needed. And same with Tolkien. I understand that Tolkien would have never actually got round to getting the Lord of the Rings published had C.S. Lewis not kicked him on the backside.
Yeah.
So also being in a church down in Clapham where the Wilberforce helped build and seeing the Clapham set and how they were called to politics, but a politics that changed the world and changed England.
Mm.
And all that came from Wesley. And so seeing the place, whenever the church has been at its best, there is real fellowship at the heart of it.
Yeah.
But it's fellowship that comes out of an understanding people are called. Like, it's not fellowship for fellowship's sake. And so that was the third one. And then from that, realise that the church is at its best when it's being hospitable. And when it's not being living for itself, it's empowering others. And then ultimately, it's about hanging on. Like, when everything in you is screaming to give up, that whenever the church has been at its best, people are hanging on and trusting Jesus. And it's usually going through moments of hell.
Yes. There's somebody who doesn't want the church to be its best.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think it was, and realising for me, and so I'd written this book sort of saying all this, and we're over in Canada, and it's like, as I was praying, like in the past we'd run out of money before and we'd prayed, and God had used money as a way to get our attention. This time we were praying and the money wasn't coming. We said, God, what are you doing? And and we ended up getting called into ministry. Like, it sounds, but we really did, like, this sense that it was right to go into a church and try and see if we could build the stuff that God had shown me through my 20 years with Fusion, and that I tried to name in that book, In the Life of a Church.
In the Life of a Church. So moving from parachurch to church.
Yeah, that's right.
And build it.
Yeah.
Even though we're all in different houses, in different places or whatever.
Yeah.
Can we be that community that...
And that's what's been driving me.
Yeah.
And trying to understand, realize how much our understanding of church has been culturally shaped.
Mm.
And I found an enemy, actually. He was a good man, but he's a man by the name of Donald McGavran.
Right.
Who most people have never heard of. But he wrote a book about church growth back in the 50s. He just wanted to grow the church. There's nothing. He's not a bad man, but the paradigm he communicated of what the church was meant to be became our paradigm of church.
Mm.
And his idea was...
Well, it's always nice to have a textbook, isn't it?
Yeah, but there are fundamental flaws that have shaped the whole Western church, building on his stuff for the last... Well, since then.
Yes.
And so people like Hybels and all those others would point to McGavran and say, this is what we're working on. But McGavran's idea was that the purpose of the church was to grow the church. And he actually said, we need three roles. We need pastors and evangelists, and we need faithful church people who will pay for the other two, pretty much.
Okay, that doesn't actually sound like the scripture verse I remember.
No. And that's... So it becomes a narrow narrow ecclesiology. And so if you in this paradigm, if you want to take your faith seriously, you have to become an evangelist. We actually haven't had a strong theology of the arts or a theology of healthcare or being a lawyer or a doctor. And some people are actually called to other things than evangelism. And it's this paradigm that shaped organisations like Fusion and YWAM and Youth for Christ, and they all sprung out around the same time because it was all people, and they're all very evangelistically focused, which is great. but we needed a broader theology, and we needed a theology that was more than the four spiritual laws. So I think I realised, as being over there, being in North America, seeing how cultural the church was, and that the way we've, this was really clear, the way we've done church up to this point cannot be the way we do church into the future.
Yeah.
And some of the stuff I picked up and you've picked up through living in intentional community and the wrestle for, you know, how do you step into the mess of integrity and living faith in the mess of reality and all. I think that's more where we need to head. We need to head to what does it mean to be an authentic community of followers of Jesus?
Yeah.
And which is... very different way of doing church. It's much more than what happens on a Sunday morning. So that's what we were wrestling with in Canada. And God had, it's interesting, God had taken the church over there, the really special people, we love them and really miss them, on a journey. But they'd done the Rick Warren phase, they'd done the Bill Hybels phase, like most of, you know, done the 40 days of whatevers. But they got to the point and said, okay, who do we want to be? They got to a point and said, we want to be followers of Jesus, but we know we need to help people step into mission. We don't know how to do that. And so they created this big open job description and said, come and help our church move into mission. And it was on the basis of that that I ended up being their mission pastor for 5 years.
Fantastic. So one of my favourite moments with you in that church was the farewell video when they said that when you turned up at the church, they couldn't understand a word you were saying.
That's right.
because of your accent. which brings me to, okay, so you're growing a church community there and it's wonderful.
Yeah.
Why come back here?
Well, it was a bit of an identity crisis. In many ways, we took 3 years to, I think God took us to Canada for lots of reasons. We thought we were going there to change Canada, but God was actually taking us to, I think, heal and grow and go through the identity crisis that was becoming a pastor for me. Like, I really never planned to be a pastor. But after 3 years, Leanne and I started, we would often go for walks, and it was something, is there something wrong? We tried to settle. We really tried to settle in Canada. We loved the people. We loved the church. And it was actually, Keith, who knew your parents, had arrived. And so he was saying, you know the landlords? Yeah, I know the landlords. anyway, because he'd met with them. And he was now our worship pastor. And it really felt like it was we were getting somewhere. But we just couldn't settle, and we went off to a conference, and again, the Christian Missionary Alliance churches in Canada are fantastic, but the conferences were unlike any conferences we'd been to before. They were at the Chateau Lake Louise, which is the Fairmont Hotel there. It was fantastic. But we went to every year we go off and spend 3 or 4 days at the Fairmont, and this time we went and we just got at prayer time, we got a bunch of people together and said, look, I ask you to pray for us. We're just feeling unsettled. We can't, like, the money won't free up for us to buy a house. We something going on. Is there something in us that's wrong?
Mm.
And anyway, given a bit of a picture that we were on this journey and that God was going to take us somewhere. And that's what we just had a sense of, you know, it was God was going to take us out and maybe back to Australia. And we got back from that conference. The day we got back to that conference, Stephen Baxter, who is the state leader now for the Baptists in Tasmania, sent us an email. Because this job at Citywide Baptist had been advertised. Initially, I looked at it and thought, I don't think so. But then I looked at it again and looked at the job description, looked at the heart of the church, and I thought, you know, I don't know if there'd be a better match.
Mm.
I sent him back an email and said, well, mate, we'd be open to it. And so we began a dialogue. And in the process of talking with the crew here, just this church here at Citywide had been on a journey too. They were uniquely positioned. The Mornington campus, which was Citygate Baptist Church, had been formed when the bridge fell down.
Mm.
And it already had this creative edge trying to respond to community needs. And because they were brought together, they were Baptists and Anglicans and all kinds of people together after the bridge.
Yeah.
And that was part of the DNA. And over here at Lena Valley, where we are, the campus here, there really had been a journey for them too of working what it meant to love the community, and then they became one campus, and we had a Nepalese congregation, and we've got an exhibition here right now of one of our Nepalese guys who communicated his journey as a refugee and coming to love Australia, but I. You know, we talked to the church here, and it seemed right to come back, and again, God confirmed it in so many ways, so much so we had pastors in our little church in Canada. We had a prayer team around us, and we went and said to our 6 prayer people, look, we think God's asking us maybe to go back to Australia, and 3 of them said, oh, good. Because God's already told us, and we didn't know how to tell you.
Oh, wow! Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, it was like
And
then subsequently, we would find after we had agreed to come back, that Leanne's mum had been diagnosed with Parkinson's, and Also, after we agreed to come back, I found out my dad had been diagnosed with Parkinson's. And so, you know, just a whole, at so many levels. And even the fact that we were able to, which is almost miraculous in the Hobart housing climate, to find a house that we could rent straight away. And then after a while, we could purchase. And so we didn't have to move again.
Yeah.
And there's this, I think it's probably similar to you, there's this sense, I am so pleased at the moment, just to put down roots. I don't want to move again. Yeah. We're here. Yeah. And it feels like this is a big enough challenge to work out, how do we do this kind of church?
Yeah.
How do we be? Like, we're, our best way of describing it at the moment is we want to follow Jesus into the adventure of whole life and authentic community. That's our best way of trying to explain the heart of what we're trying to do. We want to follow Jesus into the adventure of whole life and authentic community.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so we've been on this journey as a church trying to name what are we trying to do and how do we get there. And it feels like we're now starting to get somewhere. Yeah. Are we starting to put some legs on it?
Because it just takes time, doesn't it? I mean, it takes a lot of time.
So it's taken 18 months for them to look me over and me to look them over, and people, and we're becoming friends. And I think there's this sense of we went through these, and again, God's time. We came back, we had the 40th anniversary of the establishment of the Mornington campus, the 70th anniversary of here at Lena Valley, and the 10th anniversary of them coming together, all in the same 18 months.
Wow.
And then we had the Nepalese guys who we officially welcomed as the third congregation, and that we're learning so much from them. Look, it's a gift. And so I now feel, I wouldn't have, like, it was a horrible, disillusioning time leaving Fusion, and but I am so much freer now than I ever have been, and it's fun. Like, this is fun. This adventure is fun.
Yes, yeah, isn't that amazing?
Yeah,
and you haven't rejected Fusion. You run foundation courses regularly here. Yeah,
yeah, and but look, the truth is, Fusion in Australia has stopped running foundations courses. They're still running them around the world, but absolutely. We're still trying to work out, support the Fusion crew as best we can and stay in touch. But clearly feel and still feel like we're working to the same heart, like that hasn't changed. But we're not part of Fusion in Australia in the same way. We're now on the outside looking in.
Yes.
And love what they're about and want to do whatever we can at all to encourage it.
And work through the local church to build community here where we are.
Absolutely.
To build that whole life. Yeah.
And love working in partnership with the other churches, getting to know the crew on the Eastern Shore and here at Lena Valley. So one of the challenges of having more than one campus is it means Christmas time we have carols here at Lena Valley and over on the Eastern Shore, and things happening everywhere. But it's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think there's a chance to find a way to do church differently. Yeah, and so that's why it's good.
So you're still fairly active online. You want to give us info about your blog and podcast in case people want to...
Sure. So the blog is faithreflections.org, and it's really therapy. It's me trying to work out, make sense of stuff, and also try, like at the moment I'm trying to work out, what does church membership look like? What's the relationship of the church to other churches? And so I'm just writing about that stuff. I wrote a blog about the same-sex marriage debate, working that through, written a lot about leadership and all kinds of things. I started it back in 2010, and it's sort of been...
I mean, it's like what you were saying with your book. It's actually, as you write it out, you start to understand what you actually think about it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Absolutely. Well,
that's what I find with writing it.
And it got me off in a way. Like, it actually started, like, my first book was really just an anthology of blogs.
Yes.
And so I started to realise it was possible. We got the faithreflections.org. And then now with the church, we've got a podcast where... all the sermons that every Sunday get up and uploaded, and also we are now broadcasting the sermons live to Facebook, and they also get uploaded to YouTube. And we're developing like an almost a congregation of online viewers, mm-hmm. which is fascinating. Like there's a lot of people, a lot of services being obviously coming from the States and all sort of stuff. But I think people are enjoying having a Tasmanian thing they can tune into and be part of. Mm-hmm. And so yeah, citywide Baptist Church on Facebook. Every Sunday the sermon gets uploaded and is actually broadcast live. And that's just been a function we've had to, because we've got these two campuses.
Mm.
And I was wrestling with, how do we take this journey together? And what it means is we're actually simulcasting. I'm normally 2 weeks at Mornington, because it's a slightly bigger congregation than here,
mm.
and then 1 week here. Mm. But either way, yeah. wherever I'm preaching from, the other site is also getting the same sermon. Yeah. So yeah. that's what we're doing.
Yeah, fantastic. Okay, a couple of questions I ask. Everybody, first one, when do you feel closest to God?
It varies. Like for me, in the morning with my cup of coffee and my quiet time is essential for me. That's like a lifeline. Sometimes some of my most precious moments have been in mission, you know, where God turns up and there's stuff happening you can't explain, and and you're sort of shoulder to shoulder with friends, and so I'm not naturally an extrovert. Like I being alone recharges my batteries.
Mm.
But I think probably the most profound times have been with friends. Like a number of times, me and my friends when we were working with Fusion, we didn't have the answers, but we'd go into a school and we had to run a program, and we sort of tried, okay, God, what are we going to do?
Turn up now.
Yeah, that's right. And he did. And people's lives would change.
Mm.
And so those are probably the two edges.
Mm. What does your quiet time look like, can I ask?
Yeah.
Go into that intimate moment?
Yeah, no. For the first 25 years of my life, I used to feel guilty because I knew I needed to have it more regularly. But I cracked the code when I realised if I have it with my first cup of coffee. And so I have my cup of coffee in my hand, I go and find a quiet space. And I've been through different phases. Like I've been through the same, like I've read different versions of the Bible. I went through a message phase and back to the NIV now. I've got bookmarks in the Old Testament, in the Psalms, in the Gospels, and in the rest of the New Testament, sort of working through them sequentially, gradually.
Mm.
But also, I've got a list of stuff an ongoing list, but particular things to be praying for, because my memory can be all over the place. So I need to find things to trigger my memory for prayer. And I'll also, at the moment, I'm finding I get an email from Richard Rohr. So I read his email. I find that because he's a bit left of centre, and I find him challenging. So I find that helpful. And I'm reading through on the other, like this, at the moment, this new catechism kind of thing from the Tim Keller mob, the more new reformed mob, and I just read a bit of those things, and I journal, mostly I say, God help, but also, Jesus, what are you saying? And it's almost always the same thing. So relax, man. It's okay. I've got you. but the journaling for me is often getting out my fears and stuff. So I find it hard to do it in less than half an hour.
Mm.
For sure. So it's usually 45 minutes or an hour. But that space is pretty essential.
Yeah, it's interesting that in the author community, we're encouraged to do something which is called morning pages,
oh, yeah.
which is 3 pages of free writing in your journal.
Oh, really?
And I just think, Yeah, isn't that funny? Christians knew that one already.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
You know, read something good, write in your journal. We got that one.
That's, yeah, yeah, absolutely.
That's good. All right, so finally, what's something about God and Christianity that you wish everyone knew?
I think some of the stuff that I've learned over the last 6 years is, I think, I spent a lot of years trying to avoid the pain of, like, I would avoid difficult conversations, or I would, and I think one of the truths that's right through the Bible, Jesus says, unless you're ready to give up your life for my sake, you won't find it. But if you're willing to give up your life, that's where you find your life. That you find your life on the other side of the pain. Like, on the other, I'm not avoiding it, not looking for coping strategies to deal with it. But that Christianity calls you to maturity and calls you to wholeness. Like, where in Galatians it says it's for freedom you've been set free. But don't use your freedom as an excuse to do anything you want. Mm. You don't, because it's when you have coping strategies to avoid the pain, or where you run away or whatever, it just keeps you immature. And so I feel like that as I look back on my life, I am grateful for the difficult moments. And I'm not grateful for them in the moment usually. But there's something when I step into it, stop avoiding it. And I think that the idea of, we see in Ephesians 4, which is what I kept coming back to, when the church is working well, when the gifts are working well, people are growing up.
Mm-hmm.
The people are finding the works, their unique purpose in life. When the apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors and teachers are working well, people are finding their unique works of service. You know, this is what Paul says. He says, come on, boys and girls, the church is meant to be this place that helps us grow up. And I think we've mistaken what the task of the church is. I think we have bought into the consumer mindset that says the church is a product to help me feel better and give me it's a product I can consume. Whereas the church is meant to be a family that helps me grow up and find my right relationship with God and the world. Mm-hmm. And the outcome of the church working well is and the outcome of Christianity when it works well is mature people who are grounded, who aren't tossed around. Like Paul's picture of immaturity is being tossed around like by life, like you're on a cork on the wave. So I think... I think we've settled for a weak version of Christianity that is and it's tempting. I understand. I mean, I understand the tempting. Like, if there was such a thing as a prosperity gospel that was true, I can understand the but it's dangerous, that stuff.
Mm.
And we end up with churches full of immature people because we don't have the hard discussions, and we tell them that somehow God should save you from the pain. Whereas it was probably about 4 years ago, I realized that Psalm 23 says, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I'll fear no evil because you're with me. God doesn't save us from the valley of the shadow of death, you know. Anyway,
yeah.
So I'll stop raving on, but
so great. Yeah, no, that's a good. Mm. Well, there is so much to think about there. Thank you, Matt, very much for talking with us today.
Yeah, no worries.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope this has been encouraging for you. I want to especially thank Catherine Joy Music for the theme music. If you would like to help me fund this podcast, you can find me at patreon.com/quietlife and help me out for as little as $1 a month. If you want to contact me, you can email Ruth at ruthamos.com.au or find me on Facebook at Ruth Amos Author or tweet me at A Quiet Life. I'd love to hear from you. God bless. See you next week.